Very much, Peter. I don't know whether you folks want to sit this side of me. I've been given a little note so that you can hear. I don't know whether you can hear behind me. Okay. Ruth chapter 2. The story so far. Now, if you're working from a Bible, you can see where we have already started. But have your service sheets open if you'd like to follow along. I hope that will help you, and it certainly will help me as we go. So the story so far in this book of Ruth, Family Fortunes, as I've called it. A famine drives Elimelech and his wife Naomi and their two sons to go to Moab for a while. That's the start in chapter 1. They leave behind their people. It's a foreign land where they're going. So their God was not worshipped in this land. Whilst they were there, we're told that Elimelech died. And the two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, married Moabite women, Orpah and Ruth. 10 years go by, and then after these years had passed, Mahlon and Chilion both died as well. We don't know the circumstances of their death, and we can't begin to imagine the pain of loss that Naomi had to bear. When the news reached her that the famine back home was over, Naomi set out for home, and her daughter-in-laws went with her. Naomi wants them to go back to their home and start a new life. And she pleads with them. Orpah goes back, but Ruth is set to bind her life to Naomi and to Naomi's God, come what may. So now we're at chapter 2. But just to say, I think the first chapter is in minor key, as it were. Studying it last week together, excuse me, we were forced to confront some difficult issues. Issues like leaving people behind to go to a new place, death and bereavement, bitterness and anger towards God. And I hope you, like me, as I reflected on last Sunday, can understand afresh that our God is big enough to take our pain and our sorrow, our anger and our bitterness. He is big enough to do that. And in exchange, to echo Isaiah's lovely words, chapter 61, in exchange for these things, to give us beauty for ashes, oil of gladness instead of mourning, a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. I think that's absolutely wonderful, and this is the truth in this book. This is to be Naomi's and Ruth's experience as they arrive in Bethlehem. But of course they don't know. The story is yet to unfold. Naomi, in her bitterness, she says, remember from chapter 1, call me Mara, which means bitter, because the Lord had gone against her. And there she is with her devoted daughter-in-law, Ruth. And we arrive with them at Bethlehem, chapter 1 and verse 22, just as the barley harvest was beginning. Now there's a picture in itself, the famine and despair, and the lovely economy of words really there. That barley harvest was beginning, new things were coming. So my main point, as Peter said in introduction there, the whole backdrop I want to bring from chapter 2 is one of divine providence. It's particularly there in verses 1 to 3. Have a look down at those verses as we go here. The subject of divine providence seems to be one of those things that the old-time preachers used to preach often about, and it's a bit of an old-fashioned subject these days, but would be wrong to think that, because it is so strong in this book of Ruth. We are living under the providence of God, and how does he provide for us? Well, we see it here. He provides through relationships. You and I were never created to exist alone on a desert island, no matter how attractive that might sometimes be. We were meant to be with each other. And so this focus of the story now switches to Ruth, who doesn't know who owns the fields where she hopes to glean. A little bit of background, Old Testament background here. The people, God's people, believed in God, Jehovah Jireh, God the provider. That was one of his names. And they were God's chosen people, Israel. And they had wonderful covenant promises from God. This is what he said about these people he loved. You shall be my people, and I shall be your God. And this is the backdrop of all God's people's actions, thoughts, deeds, whatever. And they had a promise that we have, that Jesus makes to us. I shall never leave you or forsake you. Joshua chapter 1 and verse 5. So these people's lives were in God's hands, God the provider. And today God's people are those who call themselves Christians. What do I mean by that? Well, I mean that people who are born again of God's Spirit and are captive to Jesus Christ in their lives. Or as St. Paul says to the Colossians, chapter 3 and verse 3, our lives are hid in him. So that's a bit of a question for all of us. Are our lives hid or hidden in him? Because if they are hid in him, then God has a plan and a purpose for our lives. Lives lived out with others. And at times that plan might seem unclear. At times we simply have to trust and wait for his purposes to be revealed. And so in this unfolding story of Ruth, divine providence does not say, what will be, and nothing can stop the hand of fate. We see that God provides in the twists and turns of our lives, brought about within the decisions that we make, like I said earlier. Sometimes those decisions are in line with God's will, sometimes they're not, sometimes we can't be sure. So let's just think about this in this story of Ruth. This is a bit of chapter one, really. We might ask ourselves, should Elimelech have made the decision he did? Shouldn't he have stayed? Why did he go to Moab? But we can see, as this story unfolds, it's not the rights or wrongs of the decision that he made, but what would happen afterwards? Would God abandon them? Would God turn his back on them? Especially if God was displeased with what Elimelech had decided. And the answer to that clearly is no. God would not turn his back on them. But that's history now, the famine. And Ruth sees the practical issues staring her and Naomi in the face. What are those practical things? Well, they simply have to eat. They have to live. And Ruth has to work so both of them can live. And as we see, gleaning behind the harvesters, that would be backbreaking work in the heat of the day, but they are destitute. Will God provide? Yes, of course, he will. And as we know, the Old Testament scriptures show care for the poor is enshrined as a community principle. It was absolutely vital that the poor were cared for. And the laws of God in the book of Leviticus make provision for the poor, for the helpless, and for the sojourner. And remember, this family did sojourn, didn't they, in Moab. This gleaning might not sound much of a generous provision, but it was. Some reapers worked so speedily that much was left. Some landowners were particularly gracious in the amounts that was left for the gleaners. And I love the "as it turned out" in verse 3. You see that lovely phrase there, "as it turned out." Now I think that that's a phrase to hold on to when we think of divine providence and how it comes to us in our daily lives. That we can say, I can say, you can say, tomorrow, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, "as it turns out." Divine providence. And the things that we know that we've got to face this week, and the things as yet we don't. As it turns out. So have that in your minds and your lives this week, and be thankful for that. So that's my first three verses, a bit shorter as we go. We're going to look now at verses 4 to 13. Have a look down at those verses as we go through here. This is all in divine providence under that same heading, but particularly I see two things here in these verses, 4 to 13. Kindness and courtesy. Now, in the long wait for the arrival of our two granddaughters, we were there in the hospital about 9:30, and we got to see them about 5:00. I was getting a bit bored and a bit desperate, and I was reading all the boards and all the information all around, and something caught my eye, and I got a pen and I wrote it down on my newspaper. It's a statement. It's a statement that I think originated with the Secretary of State for Health. And this was on the board. Compassion, kindness, respect are the very essence of dignified care. We must make sure these principles are at the heart of everything we do. That was a wonderful word from the Lord as I read that, and how apposite it is in this story. Kindness and courtesy. I wonder if you realize that Boaz, of course, was an Anglican worshipper. Now you can say, well, how do you know that? Well, you can see that from verse 4, have a look at that, because he says, "The Lord be with you," and all good Anglicans say, "and with thy spirit." Yeah, that wasn't, not very, perhaps we're not as Anglican as I thought we were. "The Lord be with you, and with thy spirit," we say. Well, there we are. But we quickly see, don't we, how well and considerate Boaz is to his workers, how well he treats them. More like caring friendship, you would say, than slavery. Something to consider here about faith. Faith displayed in the workplace. More than simply being known as a Sunday churchgoer, perhaps you are in a position of authority or responsibility in your place of worship. And maybe people, or hopefully people, will see a Boaz in you. I wonder if you, as you go about your work, if you have responsibility for people, whether you have kindness and courtesy at the heart of your work. For Ruth gets what she doesn't expect. First of all, no prejudice as a foreigner. Verse 5, Boaz asked the foreman, and this is quite an important thing and speaks of Ruth's situation here. Boaz asked the foreman, "Whose young woman is that?" Okay? And when you stop and think about that, it's not the same thing as "who is that young woman?" He assumes her status is that of a servant girl who belongs to someone. And we can see that the in verses 6 and 7. The foreman replied, "She is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi." And then we see this kindness and courtesy unfold, verses 8 and 9. "So Boaz said to Ruth, 'My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting. Follow along after the girls. I've told the men not to touch you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled.'" Kindness, courtesy. And we get a hint of Boaz's kindness, don't we, in his greetings to his workers. But it seems in an instant Boaz sees how vulnerable Ruth is. Anyone could molest her, and she would need to be able to get a drink. And she hasn't got any friends to offer her any help. Kindness breeds kindness, especially when it's not self-centered, self-righteous, or comes with strings attached. And verse 10, have a look at that verse, shows Ruth genuine surprise and deep respect at Boaz's kindness to a foreigner. And she would have stood out in the crowd as a foreigner, and she would have to live on the margins of society. And Boaz's respect is triggered by all that he has heard of Ruth's kindness to Naomi. So the kindness and courtesy of Boaz gives her instant protection and blessing. Verse 12, "May the Lord repay you for what you have done." Sometimes we kind of, that phrase has a kind of negative connotation, doesn't it? But here it couldn't be more positive. "May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take notice." Kindness and courtesy. It's a lovely picture of this in the book of Exodus, chapter 9 and verse 4, where God says, "I carried you on eagle's wings." It's a lovely, lovely truth. A mother eagle teaching her young to fly. It's that kind of kindness and courtesy. Augustine, in his Confessions, wrote a lovely prayer about this. I really love this prayer, and we can kind of pray it with our eyes open as we listen. But it goes like this: "O Lord our God, let the shelter of your wings give us hope. Protect us and uphold us. You will be the support that upholds us from our childhood till the hair of our heads is grey. When you are our strength, we are strong. But when our strength is our own, we are weak. O Lord, our God, let the shelter of your wings give us hope." Where do you seek your refuge? Is it under the shelter of God's wings? Sometimes we wander away from God. Sometimes, like the baby eagle, we're very vulnerable. Come back to the safety and protection under his wings. And I think that that's a message for us as well, to come back under the safety of God's wings, especially if we've spent time recently striking out on our own. Come back to the shelter of his wings. Kindness and courtesy. Are you a kind person? A courteous person? Am I a kind and courteous person? Let this book of Ruth help us in our kindness and our courtesy. And then briefly, verses 14 to 23. Have a look down at those verses as we begin to draw to an end. Now, I've got two things here, generosity and gratitude, that I see in these verses. There's nothing mean, there's nothing measured when it comes to the providence of God through relationships. And we see such generosity from the hand of Boaz in verses 14 to 17. Have a little look at those verses. Ruth is invited to share the feast with the harvesters, roasted grain. Apparently that the nearest we can get to that is popcorn. I like the sound of that. And this providence of God, the Amplified Bible, says of verse 14, and I really love this, and this is something that we often reflect, Leslie and I, in our family life, is handfuls on purpose. This is God our provider. Not a few grains, but masses, handfuls on purpose. And I think it's a lovely, lovely picture of the provision of God here. And Selwyn Hughes, a well-known Christian writer, says this, tokens of his goodness, some special encouragement, some evidence of his care that serves to keep us moving forward and keeps our hearts bent on the divine task. May God bless you and bless me with handfuls on purpose. And so Ruth is introduced into Bethlehem society, starting with Boaz's workers. As she gets up to glean, verse 16, Boaz orders that Ruth be allowed to go beyond the legal limits and glean before the reapers were finished. Verse 17, she gathers about 5 gallons, 22 litres of barley. Now that, I'm told, would need a vessel big enough to contain a person. So how on earth she got this home, we're not told. That's what an ephah is. Anyway, she goes back to Naomi. So we see there's nothing mean and measured in the generosity of Boaz, and there's nothing mean and measured in the gratitude in response from Naomi, as we see in verses 19 onwards. There's a lovely kind of feel to this here. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one whose place she had been working. The name of the man I worked with Boaz, she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He's not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "This man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers." Ah, now we see what's going on. And of course, we're going to follow that up next week as we look at chapter 3, divine providence indeed. So as chapter 2 of Ruth ends similarly with a harvest scene as chapter 1, but with a huge difference. Chapter 1 had that backdrop of sadness, bitterness, aloneness and poverty. And chapter 2 has hope, comfort and provision. Do we need reminding about these things? Yes, we do. That when things are looking very bleak indeed, and God seems to have turned his back on your situation, he has a redeemer at hand. For Ruth, the redeemer is Boaz. For each one of us, the redeemer is Jesus. Let's bow our heads and pray.